very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a beautiful Wednesday afternoon along Michigan Avenue. We're in the Allstate Showcase studio. I don't know how many more beautiful Wednesday afternoons we have this year.
What a gorgeous day.
Terry Savage is in the studio, and I was going to just say it's always a lovely day when you're here, Terry.
You are so charming. And, folks, he really is that charming. He really is that good guy, charming guy.
I really, every day I wake up on Wednesday and I say, how can I get Terry Savage to talk politics on the Business Lunch? And the debate is tonight, the last of the presidential debates. But you pointed out a story to me. We talk a lot about this fiduciary rule, right?
Right.
New Labor Department requirement that kicks in, I think, next year. And is it the Trump camp that says they would get rid of it?
Yeah, this is very interesting. Several years ago, I signed on to something. I was honored to be part of the fiduciary committee. The fiduciary rule that finally passed the Department of Labor, now not the SEC, which has jurisdiction over all investing, but the Department of Labor, which has jurisdiction over retirement accounts, managed to get this rule in. It goes into effect next year, and basically it says something that I cannot imagine you could argue against. It says that financial salespeople, advisors, whatever, must, number one, fully disclose all costs, commissions, annual fees right up front, and number two, are obligated not to just find suitable investments for their clients, but to put their clients' interests ahead of their own. Now, isn't that exactly what you want from anybody who's giving you financial advice? I'm always think my doctor is really giving, you know, what's in my best interest. Why shouldn't your financial advisor? Well, today there's a headline. A big hedge fund guy, big contributor to Trump, says first thing on the agenda is to repeal this fiduciary rule. That's what Trump's going to do first thing.
Does he talk like that, really?
This guy, Scaramucci? Yeah, he is. He's just one of these Wall Street guys. What's happened is, in advance of the fiduciary rule coming in, and for very good reasons, a lot of advisors are now switching their clients into, index funds, because the big fees are charged by the managed funds. And this guy says, well, you're discriminating against people who manage funds. Hey, I'll be happy to pay if you had a track record that said I should pay a little extra commission to get in your fund. But as a whole, 95% over the past 5 years of managed mutual funds in all categories have failed to beat their benchmark index, so why not just be part of the index?
And what is the requirement now? I mean, there is a... It's not that they have to operate in their clients' best interest, but it's like they have to...
Something suitable. And if there were an equally suitable fund that didn't charge a commission, they're not obligated to say, hey, but I could get you this thing at low... I mean,
so that's where we are. So there could be two funds, and the advisor could make money off of one and not off the other.
That's what happens all the time.
And right now they could do that.
Right. I get that. But the point I'm making is Wall Street got way carried away with itself, and this fiduciary rule is going to mean they can't sell clients rich stuff like this and make a fortune. And really good investment advisors aren't going to be hurt by this, because their goal is to make money for their clients. They'll be paid appropriately. But I've stayed away from the whole political election on the grounds that they aren't talking economics, so why should I open up my mouth? Because that's what I've said. But this item on CNBC today, this hedge fund guy saying, we're going to do away with the fiduciary rule so we Wall Streeters can keep ripping off the ordinary investor. My smoke's coming out of my ears.
Okay, we haven't talked too much about it, and the campaign really hasn't been very much about issues. And you can, you know, point your finger in any which way, point the finger of blame if you want. But the last debate is tonight. Is there anything you're waiting to hear when it comes to economic issues from Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump?
You know, it's very interesting. There hasn't been a lot of discussion of economic issues. Tonight, I think there are a couple of sections that are reserved for the economy. So I hope you'll hear about taxes. I hope you will hear that America is not taxed. No matter what Trump says, I'm sorry, if it were anybody else but Trump, I'd hope you'd hear an interesting discussion about taxes and the importance of making the United States competitive and of not attacking business that creates jobs. But tonight, that's one issue. One of these people is going to be president. Let's talk about the fact that we have an $84 trillion unfunded liability, not just that beyond our $18 trillion national debt and how we're going to grow our way out of that, how we're going to adjust the benefits that people have been promised, not the people who are already getting Social
right.
Security, but the people who are paying in so they'll want to keep paying in because they'll believe they could get something out. There are a whole lot of economic issues to discuss. Maybe the subject of the tax holiday will come back to bring $1 trillion back from overseas and corporate profits. That would certainly help.
No, that's way too deep. That'll be way too deep for tonight.
That's way too deep for this? So what are they going to talk about?
They are going to talk about entitlements, or they're supposed to anyway. I know that's going to be. And the fact is that even if these things aren't, there are sort of position papers. I know Hillary Clinton has quite a website about her positions, and Donald Trump, I'm sure you can go on his website and find where they stand as well. So the information is available.
Yeah, you know, well, we have, economically speaking, a tough choice tonight. In no other regard do I think the choice is tough, but from an economics point of view, I've always believed that people don't work to pay taxes, they work to keep an after-tax return, and that when you lower taxes, you grow an economy. That's just, you know, John F. Kennedy said it first. He said, a rising tide lifts all ships. And Kennedy, he was a Democrat, for those of you too young to remember, said, quote, paradoxically, the way to increase tax revenues is to cut tax rates. That was John F. Kennedy. So it's not a political issue so much as an economic issue. And I wish we could get around to understanding how the economy works and how to best provide benefits for the people that have earned them.
All right,
I'm not optimistic we'll hear
it. Talking about entitlements, there was news this week that the Social Security increase will be 0.03% next year.
You know, I never use the word entitlements. I was going to interrupt you before,
okay.
But I was too polite. I mean, people paid into Social Security. That is their earned benefit. Their earned benefit. Okay? Earned benefit. Now, obviously, we have no inflation, quoth the government, or practically no inflation. So Social Security recipients, if you couldn't see the sarcastic smile on my face, I just want you to know that even though the CPI says you're only going to get a 0.3% increase in your Social Security check, about $4 or $5 in the average check, which will mean something to people to whom every penny means something, the fact is, we know, and that's a wink wink, everybody knows that the things that affect seniors most are rising, and the top of that being healthcare costs.
So fuel costs were down or dropping, and
yeah,
that kept inflation down,
right.
And that's why we're only at 0.03%.
Exactly. We've had, the CPI has been showing, what's just perking up a little bit. Well, we can't seem to, quote, get inflation going so the Fed can believe the economy's growing. But seniors have had a lot of increases.
Okay, 20 seconds. How would you change it then?
How would I change the CPI?
Yeah, I mean, if we rely on this increase at the CPI and that doesn't fairly reflect
it. I think there should be, I'll give you something that I had never thought of before. You know, we have an urban consumer CPI and this bureau CPI. There's like five CPIs. I think we should have a senior CPI. And instead of putting in the cost of mortgages, which are impacting young people and so forth, I think what we should put in is the cost of living index that affects the average person who's receiving Social Security, everything from transportation, bus costs,
so medication,
medications,
cost of dinner
drugs,
before 4:30. I'm sorry.
Even the early bird special is going up, Steve. I know you haven't been out to see it.
That's Terry Savage. All right, we're going to check the quick traffic. We'll be back. I want to talk about
Medicare Part D.
Up.
This is so important. If you're a senior, you have to re-sign up for Medicare Part D. Get your mother on the line right now to listen.
My mom's not a senior. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for tuning in. Hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on Facebook, Steve Bertrand Travel, Steve Bertrand on Books. You can find me. The Commerce Department just called, and they want to know more information, Terry, about your senior CPI.
Yeah, my senior CPI. I'm going to send that to whoever the next president is.
I like that. I really do like that idea.
This is more important to seniors now. Pay attention, but this whole article is up at terrysavage.com. It's called Your Drug Test. We ask seniors to do so much. This is not Obamacare. This is open enrollment for Medicare. This is not about the first time you enroll where you get Medicare Part A and Medicare Part B, but every year from October 15th through December 7th, seniors get two choices. The first is, do I want to go with something called Medicare Advantage, Medicare Complete, where it's all one package and you just pay for it. You don't get a choice of doctors and so forth, but your drugs are included in it and so forth. if for those people, though, who have traditional Medicare and don't have other comparable coverage, there is something that you must do every year at this time, and that is decide on which Medicare Part D, D for drugs, plan you will have. Even though you haven't changed your prescriptions, even though you don't take any prescription medicines, it is this moment where you should go, and I'm going to give you some resources to get help, where you should go and figure out what is the best Medicare Part D plan.
Terry, I read your advice at Huffington Post and terrysavage.com, and I start to think there is no way I'm up to this.
You are up to this, but I'll give you two great places to get help. But the first thing you need to know is that even though you were happy with your program last year, they may have reclassified your drugs into a higher, more expensive tier. They may have changed from co-insurance to co-payments to co-insurance.
Explain that.
Well, if you are paying just a fixed copay for a prescription, actually on the generic drugs, you may not even have a copay. But when you get up to tier three and tier four, instead of having a fixed copay, they're now switching to co-insurance where you pay a percentage. And when the cost of the drug goes up during the year, you will suddenly find yourself laying out more out of pocket in July, August, and September because your drug went up. So it's not just a fixed $45. It could be a percentage that means you're paying now $85.
And
for
are
that.
Different plan, or Part D plans, some will make them copays and some will make them co-insurance?
I'm not going to get lost in the weeds. Here's what you do. You take out currently all your prescriptions, the bottles, line them up right in front of you. The only good website in the entire United States government is Medicare.gov. Go there, click on Drug Coverage Part D. You put in your own name and your own information, your Medicare number, and then you list your drugs, and they will tell you which plans have the lowest out-of-pocket cost now. But it could change during the year as prescription drug prices go up. So you want to know not only the premium, not only the total lowest out-of-pocket cost, but you also want to know what open exposure you have through this co-insurance thing. And if you've got a drug that's one of those expensive ones, you could find yourself paying more during the year. So I've listed two resources for you. One is free. One costs a little bit of money, but they will work through everything with you. The first one is eHealthMedicare.com. Go to the site, but you can call their toll-free number, and they will walk you through what the best plan is for you. Look, even if you're not taking a prescription drug, you're obligated to have this. So you want one. Let's just suppose you get sick and you need antibiotics for 2 weeks.
Right.
You want one that, number one, has your pharmacy nearby and has the lowest copayment. If you have a lot of drugs, they'll walk you through this. The other one I have found the most incredible resource, they're in Milwaukee, actually. It's called 65, the number 65incorporated.com, 65incorporated.com. They help you find not only the best Part D plan going through all this criteria, they help you decide maybe you should have Medicare Advantage to cover your everything. They charge a fee of $119 for Part D and more if they're working through your entire financial health picture. But when you think about what your potential out-of-cost exposure is, if you've got a complicated situation, 65incorporated.com is a place to go. Otherwise, eHealthMedicare.com. There are a number of others that will help you figure out, but you must do it. You just have to do it. Don't just blindly renew your coverage.
Terry Savage, good to see you again.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 1237 here in Chicago. Now, I saw a survey, I don't know how long ago it was, but the idea was that people weren't as interested in making more money as they were interested in making fair money. In other words, they wanted to know that what the guy or the woman next to them was making and that they were being paid comparably. They didn't want to be left behind. I think that's kind of what's behind this new app from Glassdoor.com. We're going to be joined now by Scott Dabrowski, who is a career trends analyst for Glassdoor, and he's going to sort it out. It's called Know Your Value. Scott, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You bet. Okay, so this is fascinating to me because I really think this is a central question that so many people have. They just want to know that they're being paid fairly, or they're being paid like the person who is also working next to them. We hear a lot about it when it comes to gender issues, and there certainly is that. But I think it has to do, you know, at a different level with all of us in many ways. And this is the sort of thing that Glassdoor is tackling now. Explain this for me.
It is. Well, you know, it's no surprise. We know that most Americans, nearly two-thirds of Americans, say, hey, I want more information about what I should get paid for my job at my company, for my skills, where I live. So basically, everyone is saying, I want more personal information on how much I should get paid. And at Glassdoor, we really promote salary transparency and workplace transparency. We've heard this from our 33 million users each month. And so we're really proud today to deliver this new product called Know Your Worth. And it does just that. People can enter in a little basic information, and within seconds, they get their current market value right now where they live.
And this was just announced today, correct?
Correct, a few hours ago.
And so people will use this. I suppose they could use it to go to the boss and say, look, people are making more money than me. I should get a raise. But it probably will also offer people a little bit of peace of mind, or just crucial information about what they're being paid and what others who do what they do are being paid.
You're right. One of the main goals, to be really clear with this tool, is to just help ensure all people that they are receiving equal pay for equal work, period. And so whether you know you're underpaid or overpaid, it almost doesn't matter. With this tool, you're going to get near real-time insight into how much you're worth in your market right now. It's updated every week because it takes into account local job market insights and data trends that we are able to access here at Glassdoor. And so 1 week your worth could go up, and then, you know, a few months later it could go down a little bit. And that would likely be a reflection of what's happening in the economy, the local market where you live.
Okay, Scott. So it's very difficult for me to understand how you can do this accurately. I know you mentioned 33 million people plugging in their data, but the data being plugged into in Topeka is very different than being plugged into in Chicago. So say you are an office manager in the city of Chicago, you put in your data and you get out information about what average office workers in Chicago are making. How does that work? How do you figure out the different geography, different markets and things like that?
Sure. Well, there's a very robust methodology that's driven by data science and machine learning. But the quick synopsis for this purpose is, you know, we sit on millions and millions of salary reports that are self-reported by real employees. And then when people enter in five pieces of criteria about themselves, where they work, the employer, their job title, how much money they make, their salary, their location, and years of relevant work experience, we're able to marry that data, combine it with near real-time local job market insights and data trends, such as are job openings going up or going down in your area. And so we're able to spit out, based on all of this information, how much you're worth. So you're right, because what others have reported in Chicago, you're going to get a fair market estimate for Chicago, and that's likely always going to be higher than what you would find in Topeka, likely due to cost of living and salaries being lower there.
And Scott, no one wants to live in Topeka.
Well, hey, many people do, and then I hear they like it.
I'm sure they do. I'm kidding. But okay, let's bring it back to me then. Yeah. I'm a radio host. There aren't many of us around. So if I put my data in, I don't imagine that this would help me much, would it?
You know, it would help you. So we've put in reporters in Chicago, actually, before this interview. And so what you'd want to find out is if you are being paid fairly for your years of relevant work experience. Right now, the question is, how do you know you're receiving fair pay? What if you went to the radio station across the street? You could get paid more there, or surprise, maybe you're actually getting paid above what you're actually worth at your current station.
I guess, but my point is, would your data pool be strong enough to support people who are fairly individual in what they do?
Yes. So in this first iteration, we are confident that we'll be reporting salaries and estimates for about 60% of the U.S. workforce. Where you are for what you do in Chicago, yes, absolutely. We would not have salary estimates or fair market value estimates at the time if we didn't have enough data. So really for obscure or weird job titles, or yes, if someone is a contractor and says, let's say they freelance and work for five different companies, at this time, they would not receive an estimate.
Your goal is, though, that you would have data for them eventually.
Absolutely, yes. We know through this machine learning algorithm, the tool will only get smarter in time, and we're going to have future iterations. So we're really proud and happy with this first introduction into the market. It's still the majority of Americans, and certainly in Chicago, it's going to be a lot of people because it's a big market, so we have tons of data there. But yes, not everyone right now.
No, and I didn't mean to knock it down. I was frankly just curious about it. And it's free, right? I don't have to pay anything to find out I'm being underpaid.
Nope. All you have to do is go to Glassdoor.com, click on Know Your Worth, put in 5 data points, and it's free. And literally within about 10 seconds, 12 seconds, you will get your worth, and you can use that to figure out, are you being paid fairly? You want to use it to negotiate with your boss, or perhaps stay where you are.
I just can't imagine, you know, the dings going off at different computers and workplaces around an office when people find out they are under or overpaid.
Say
you get the data.
Also remember,
go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say, this is a starting point. You know, if you look at the number and you just go in and ask for more money, we are not advocating for that. It's a starting point. You know, this is base pay right now. You got to understand how your total compensation plan is set up where you work. Base pay is usually not the end-all be-all for most employers.
Right, and you're very upfront about that. This is about base pay, not about other benefits. One other thing, we've got a minute or so left. You have advice for employees who find out this data or their number, but you also have advice for employers, right, at the website, what to do when people come to them with this data. Explain that for me.
Yeah, it's not a big surprise. We are aware that this could catch some employers off guard, perhaps. You're right. One could be fearful. Oh, no, 12 employees are going to come and ask for more money thanks to Glassdoor. So if that happens, and it's already happening here at Glassdoor, for instance, people are using the tool here internally. And so what we recommend is actually doing what our HR vice president is doing, which is hear the ask, but first be proactive about transparency and how salaries are set. Most employees, believe it or not, don't even know how pay is determined at their companies. So if you're an employer, you want to communicate clearly with your workforce, hey, this is how pay is determined at my company. Here's what you can expect. Here is how we calculate base pay in conjunction with the total rewards package that we offer. Here's how you can get to the next pay bracket. When employees have that information, it will empower them to make smarter asks. But also, as the employer, this is going to be how you can tackle these types of questions. And really, whether it's the information on Glassdoor or any time anyone asks for a pay raise, you should be armed with this information first.
That is Scott Dabrowski, a Glassdoor career trends analyst. You can find more at Glassdoor.com. Scott, I love this idea. Thanks very much for joining us today. Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. It is the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, so I want to take you to Del Frisco's Double Eagle Steakhouse. The general manager, Rich Kiefer, is in the studio along with the wine director, Amy Luchin. Welcome to you both. Amy, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome, Rich. Appreciate coming in.
Thanks. Good to see
you. So tell me about, you know, we talk about ways to, it seems to me that this what's the company?
It's called Somm Wars.
Somm Wars, right. So the sommeliers of the three restaurants, one in Dallas, one in Chicago, and then the other in New York, are competing with wine pairings, right, with different sorts of food. So this is interesting and fun for you guys, but it's also a way to bring customers into the restaurant, isn't it?
Yes,
it is. Yeah, it's a great opportunity for people to see what we're all about on Oak Street at 58 Oak Street. I'm going to say it 12 or 13 times.
I'll just say the Esquire, right?
The old Esquire movie theater. It's a beautiful setting. It's 24,000 square feet. And what Amy's done with our wine program is just tremendous. And what she's involved with, as you spoke to, there were three events. One in New York was last week. Amy won. We have one this Friday. We want all you guys to come out to 58 Oak Street and see what Amy does with
food.
That's two. I got 11 left. And there's another one in Dallas next week. But Amy will talk about the program and the event with three lady sommeliers is actually incredible what they're doing.
Okay, so, but before we do that, the point of the event is that people can take part in it, right? They can come in on Friday, buy a ticket, and be part of it.
Yes, they participate and they vote and their vote counts as much as anyone's.
And, and you still got spots?
Yes.
All right, Amy, tell me about this competition.
Okay, so the Psalm Wars is a friendly competition between three Lady Wine directors.
You say it's friendly because you won the first round.
Well, it was an honor to win it in New York. It was a lot of fun. And the Lady Wine directors of Dallas, Chicago, and New York, each chef is putting together a four-course menu. And we pair wines with each course. So the guest will have three wines per course, and they'll choose their favorite pairing and vote on it. And at the end of each course, we'll reveal the wines because the guest will taste them blind. And the winner will be chosen at the end, and we win bragging rights for the day.
And so New York, you won it, right?
I did.
Was it close?
I won by about 8 points, I believe it was.
Right, and then
very excited.
Things wrap up then next week in Dallas, right?
Yes, they do. And all of us will be in Dallas to do the dinner, and all the girls will be here on Friday night on the 21st at Del Frisco's on Oak Street, the Esquire Theater.
I think it's 58, isn't it?
58 East Oak Street. I like to say
the one of mine.
Historical Esquire Theater.
You mentioned girls, the competitors here are all women.
My colleagues, yes.
Yeah. They're more, it seems that we used to think of as a man being the sommelier, and that's really been changing over the years, hasn't it?
It has. And we're very, very proud to have a place in the industry. There were many women before us who have started to pave the way, and we're very, very grateful for their hard work and dedication, and which a lot of them are here in Chicago. Del Frisco's as a group is behind, it's a culture of encouraging women in the workplace and also advancement opportunities.
Did you run into problems when you broke into this business because you're a woman?
Well, yes, different restaurants were, can I say, a boys' club, if you will.
Really?
And
yeah.
It took a while to find the right vehicle to practice my passion and the right person to appreciate that passion.
Tell me a little bit about that passion. I mean, how is someone drawn to becoming a sommelier? Because I would imagine it's not that easily done.
It is not, especially quite a few years back, there was not a big community of sommeliers in Chicago, although there were a few, and those are the ones who I applaud and thank for paving the way for us now.
But what drove you to it? What did you wake up one morning and say, damn, I just like the way this wine tastes with this corn dog, or what is it that made it happen?
I fell in love. I've always had a love for food and wine. That's obviously when I was in college, you're not able to
sure.
afford
right,
all the
right,
great
right.
wines, so you work in a restaurant so you can taste them. And I've always been traveling my entire life. Our parents would take us all over the country, and we'd eat as the locals did. So it was always, and they always enjoyed wine as well. So it was, and I grew up with it. But working in the restaurant all through college, and then once I started what I went to school for, I decided that is not what I want to do.
What was that?
It was very boring. It was marketing and publications and marketing research.
Well, so, okay, a lot of us will go to restaurants where we take advice from the sommelier. A lot of us don't get there. A lot of us are looking for a bottle of wine to go with our dinner at night at home, right? So what advice do you give most of us who are enjoying a glass of wine at night with their dinner when it comes to pairing?
Well, I always like to do the classic approach is what grows together goes together. So if you think of Old World, let's say in Piemonte, you have, they eat a lot of veal. So what do they grow there? They grow Barolo or Nebbiolo grapes. So Barolo or Barbaresco would be a perfect pairing for that. And if you want something that's easily, I guess, approachable.
Right.
Something medium-bodied. Merlots are beautiful if you're having burgers or a steak. Pinot Noir is very easily approachable for if you're having a lot of guests who don't eat too much. It's a lot lighter.
Somme Wars Round 2 in Chicago this Friday. It's your home chef, so I'm sure you're going to cheat a little bit, but that's okay. It's Chicago. Everyone expects that. Rich, if people wanted to get a ticket and go, where's this restaurant again?
It's at 58 East Oak Street.
Well, you're out of time. You want to mention it one more time?
Esquire Theater.
Thanks, both of you, for coming, and I appreciate it. Good luck.
Thank you so much for having us.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.